The Tenant by Freda McFadden has taken the thriller world by storm, climbing bestseller lists and captivating readers with its psychological depth and shocking twists. This domestic thriller has become a TikTok sensation, with countless BookTok creators praising its unpredictable narrative and page-turning suspense. Even celebrities like Reese Witherspoon have highlighted it in their book clubs, noting how it masterfully plays with reader expectations. What makes this book particularly compelling is McFadden's ability to craft seemingly ordinary characters harboring extraordinary secrets. As a practicing physician specializing in brain injury, McFadden brings a unique perspective to her psychological thrillers, weaving medical knowledge into her narratives. The Tenant explores the terrifying possibility that those closest to us might be complete strangers, a theme that resonates deeply in our increasingly isolated modern society. Blake Porter has finally achieved his career ambition, vice president at Coble & Roy, one of Manhattan's most prestigious marketing firms. The corner office on the 25th floor still carries whispers of its previous occupant, David Chen, whose attempted suicide left a dark legacy. Chen had tried to force open the safety-locked window, leaving scratch marks on the frame that Blake notices each morning. Now, Blake sits in the Italian leather chair he'd coveted for years, fingers occasionally tracing the gold nameplate that marks his territory. His fiancée Krista's concerns about his 14-hour workdays and missed dinners have become a constant refrain, though Blake assures her it's temporary, just until he proves himself worthy of the promotion. On a rain-slicked Tuesday evening, as he's promising Krista he'll leave early for their anniversary dinner at Le Bernardin, his boss's secretary Stacy appears in his doorway. Her usually composed features betray anxiety as she delivers the message. Wayne Vincent needs to see him immediately. The urgency in her voice makes Blake's stomach clench. The meeting in Wayne's mahogany-lined office destroys Blake's carefully constructed world. Wayne Vincent, his mentor of 10 years, the man who'd guided his career from junior copywriter to VP, sits stone-faced behind his massive desk. Without preamble, he accuses Blake of leaking confidential information about their biggest client, Meridian Pharmaceuticals, to their chief competitor. Despite Blake's passionate denials and pleas for explanation, Wayne remains unmoved. When Blake attempts to argue, Wayne's finger hovers over the security button, threatening both immediate removal and legal action for corporate espionage. Numb with shock, Blake returns to his office through a gauntlet of whispers and averted eyes. His colleagues, who'd congratulated him just weeks ago, now treat him like a pariah. As he packs his personal items into a cardboard box, family photos, his Harvard Business School diploma, the crystal paperweight from his first successful campaign, rage and despair overwhelm him. In a moment of uncontrolled fury, he hurls his new nameplate against the wall, watching it split perfectly down the middle. Standing at the window where David Chen had sought his escape, Blake finally understands the crushing weight of professional destruction. 62 days into unemployment, Blake's life has deteriorated into a routine of compulsive morning runs through Central Park and afternoons spent obsessively checking his dwindling bank account. His once pristine suits hang untouched, while his running shoes show increasing wear. Krista, still working as a pediatric surgeon, suggests selling her 3-carat engagement ring to ease their financial strain, a proposal that wounds Blake's already battered pride. Instead, he reluctantly agrees to her alternative solution, renting out their Brownstone's Garden apartment to help cover their $6,000 monthly mortgage. What begins as a pragmatic financial decision soon evolves into something far more sinister, as their new tenant initiates a calculated campaign of psychological warfare that will push Blake to question his sanity, his relationships, and ultimately, his will to survive. The search for a suitable tenant proves challenging. After a parade of unsuitable candidates, including one who put a hole in their wall during an impromptu kickboxing demonstration, Blake isn't optimistic about their prospects. The first arrival is Quillizabeth, an eccentric older woman who sprinkles salt at their doorway to ward off evil spirits, criticizes their homemade cookies as toxic, and claims to sense the presence of spirits from previous owners. Her bizarre behavior culminates in a chilling prediction after shaking Krista's hand. "Blake is going to kill you, Krista." She describes a vision of Blake stabbing Krista with a kitchen knife in their living room, a prophecy that leaves Krista visibly shaken and plants the first seed of doubt in their relationship. Their second prospective tenant, Whitney Cross, seems refreshingly normal by comparison. Around 30, with straight brown hair and dressed simply in jeans and a hoodie, Whitney works as a waitress at Cosmo's Diner. She appears genuinely excited about basic amenities like a dishwasher and washer dryer, claiming she hasn't had access to such luxuries before. The furnished bedroom on the third floor delights her, as she apparently owns no furniture. Though Blake notices Whitney is attractive, he dismisses any concerns about living with a pretty woman. When she eagerly accepts the room without hesitation, Blake insists on conducting a credit check and contacting references before finalizing the arrangement, a prudent decision that nevertheless dims Whitney's enthusiasm, raising subtle red flags about what she might be hiding. Despite Blake's reservations, Whitney's credit check comes back clean, and her boss provides a positive reference. They accept her first month's rent and security deposit, welcoming her into their home. When Whitney moves in with just two boxes and two duffel bags, her entire life's possessions, Blake's suspicions deepen, though it's too late to back out now that they've deposited her check. This minimalist arrival foreshadows the truth that Whitney is not who she appears to be, a reality that will gradually unfold with devastating consequences. Almost immediately after Whitney moves in, strange occurrences begin plaguing Blake's daily life. His Frosted Flakes cereal disappears box by box, his expensive shower products are systematically used up without replacement, and a mysterious angry rash develops across his chest and arms. The kitchen develops a horrific rotting smell that grows worse over time, eventually traced to dozens of moldy food containers deliberately hidden in the back of the refrigerator and decomposing fruit, strategically placed behind cabinets that attract swarms of fruit flies. These seemingly minor annoyances gradually escalate, creating constant tension in the household and leaving Blake questioning his own sanity. Blake's relationship with Whitney deteriorates rapidly as her passive-aggressive behavior becomes more pronounced. After confronting her about using his toiletries and food without asking, including his prescription face wash, she becomes cold and distant, adopting an air of wounded innocence. "I think it would be better to keep things separate," Blake tells her during an awkward encounter at the diner where she works, his voice tight with frustration. "You're our tenant. It's not like we're friends or anything." Whitney's hurt response, "We are not friends? Good point," establishes their adversarial dynamic, though her eyes flash with something darker than mere offense. The psychological torment intensifies when Blake discovers his chest covered in an angry red rash that spreads to his neck and face, which he attributes to Whitney using detergent containing limonene, a chemical he's severely allergic to and had specifically mentioned during her move-in. When he confronts her, Whitney mockingly cites tenant law chapter and verse, correctly noting he can't evict her without proper notice and threatening legal action if he tries. Krista walks in on this heated confrontation and initially suspects Blake might be having an affair with Whitney, though she reluctantly accepts his explanation about the allergic reaction after seeing his medical records. Late-night thumping noises from Whitney's room disrupt Blake's sleep at precisely timed intervals, and when confronted, she claims complete innocence, suggesting he's hallucinating noises and should maybe see someone about that. The gaslighting escalates as Blake finds his phone mysteriously hidden beneath Whitney's mattress, along with the exact shade of MAC Russian red lipstick that had inexplicably appeared on his shirt collar days earlier. These carefully orchestrated discoveries lead Krista to suspect Blake is cheating, despite his increasingly desperate protests that Whitney is systematically framing him. The mounting evidence against Blake creates a deepening wedge between the couple, exactly as Whitney's calculated psychological warfare intended. As Blake's life spirals out of control, his professional prospects remain increasingly bleak. His temporary job fetching coffee and making photocopies for colleagues fresh out of college represents a crushing fall from his former vice president position. The fluorescent-lit office cubicle feels like a prison compared to his previous corner office with its sweeping city views. When he impresses his new boss, Kenny, with detailed analysis of market trends and industry forecasts, a brief glimmer of hope emerges. However, Kenny reveals he's already contacted Wayne and learned about Blake's alleged theft of proprietary information. Kenny's warning is unequivocal. If Blake attempts anything similar at his company, he'll ensure Blake never works in the industry again. The false accusation that destroyed his career continues to shadow him like a persistent ghost, though he remains unaware of Whitney's orchestration behind the scenes. The domestic tension reaches a devastating crescendo with the mysterious death of the couple's beloved pet goldfish Goldie, a fish Krista had carefully tended for 3 years. Blake, increasingly vigilant to Whitney's manipulations, detects the unmistakable scent of bleach emanating from the fishbowl and immediately suspects foul play. When he voices his concerns, Krista dismisses them outright, claiming she can't smell anything unusual. The backyard funeral becomes another stage for Whitney's performance. She delivers an eloquent, tearful eulogy about Goldie's vibrant spirit and beautiful morning dances, moving Krista to emotional depths, while Blake's factual, reserved words seem cold and detached by comparison. His direct accusation that Whitney poisoned Goldie, made in front of several visiting neighbors, leads to Whitney's masterful display of hurt innocence and Krista's explosive anger at his cruelty. The situation deteriorates further when Krista discovers Whitney's signature red lipstick, Chanel's Rouge Allure in Pirate, hidden beneath Blake's dress shirts in their shared closet. It matches precisely the stain that had appeared mysteriously on his collar weeks earlier. Despite his increasingly frantic explanations about Whitney's calculated deceptions, Krista's trust has eroded beyond repair. She decides they need separation, packing a suitcase for an indefinite stay with Becky and Malcolm, longtime friends who have never hidden their disapproval of Blake and who he knows will encourage permanent separation. The final blow comes when Krista discovers a half-empty jug of bleach tucked behind Blake's shoes, planted evidence that confirms her worst suspicions about Goldie's death. His desperate protestations of innocence echo through an empty house as she departs in a waiting taxi, leaving him alone with Whitney, exactly as his tormentor planned. With Krista gone, Blake becomes increasingly paranoid about Whitney's true motives. After searching online and finding no digital footprint for Whitney Cross, he calls Telmont High School in New Jersey, pretending to verify her transcript for employment. The secretary's alarming response, warning him that Whitney is extremely dangerous, confirms his worst fears. She reveals Whitney had tormented her high school boyfriend Jordan Gallo after he cheated on her, framing him for exam theft and filling his locker with insects. Jordan ultimately jumped off the school roof, though his parents believed Whitney pushed him. She fled town before finishing high school to escape potential charges. The situation takes an even more sinister turn when Blake discovers a hidden paper bag between the refrigerator and counter. Inside are three human fingers with pink painted fingernails, a horrifying discovery that sends him into a wave of nausea. Though his first instinct is to call the police, he hesitates, worried about how this might implicate him, especially considering his elderly neighbor, Mr. Zimmerly, was recently found dead under suspicious circumstances. Determined to understand why Whitney is targeting him, Blake drives to Telmont to speak with her parents. At the Cross residence, he meets Whitney's mother, who reveals disturbing stories about her daughter's childhood, including how she pushed her brother off a jungle gym when he was 4 for breaking her toy. Mrs. Cross believes Whitney likely pushed Jordan off the roof and reveals that her husband died of a heart attack a month after Whitney disappeared. She warns Blake that Whitney never forgives or forgets perceived wrongs. Looking at family photos on the mantle, Blake makes a shocking discovery. The teenage girl in the picture isn't his tenant Whitney, but his fiancée Krista. His mind reels as everything suddenly makes terrible sense. The woman he knows as Whitney is actually Amanda Lenhart, a former PhD candidate in biology who stole Whitney's identity. And Krista is the real Whitney Cross, a psychopath who has been systematically destroying his life as revenge for his one-time affair with his boss's assistant, Stacy. The narrative takes a dramatic turn as it's revealed that Krista is actually Whitney Cross, the architect of an intricate revenge plot against Blake. Her discovery of her stolen identity began 8 months earlier at Cosmo's Diner, where she was stunned to encounter a waitress using her former name. The coincidence sent a chill through her. Someone had deliberately assumed the identity she'd worked so hard to leave behind. This revelation prompted her to reach out to Elijah Myers, the skilled identity specialist who had helped her become Krista Marshall. Elijah's investigation confirmed her fears. Whitney Cross remained listed as a missing person, and though he had meticulously erased her digital footprint, someone had managed to adopt her abandoned identity. Whitney's suspicions about Blake's infidelity had gnawed at her for months before she finally acted. One night, while he slept deeply after several glasses of wine, she carefully pressed his index finger to his phone sensor. The device unlocked to reveal dozens of intimate messages between Blake and Stacy, detailing their clandestine meetings at the Riverside Hotel and plans for future rendezvous. Her initial rage manifested in violent fantasies. She imagined slashing his tires or burning his prized collection of vintage watches. But her calculating nature prevailed. Instead, she devised a more sophisticated form of retribution, systematically destroying his career. She spent weeks copying his confidential client files, then strategically sold them to his firm's biggest competitors. The resulting scandal effectively ended his professional reputation. With Blake's finances in ruins, Whitney implemented the next phase of her plan. She suggested taking in a tenant, presenting it as a practical solution to their money troubles. Behind the scenes, she orchestrated every detail of Amanda's arrival. She bribed Amanda's previous landlord to fabricate eviction papers and hired a series of increasingly outrageous actors to pose as potential tenants, including an amateur taxidermist who brought his works in progress to the viewing and a death metal musician who insisted on midnight practice sessions. The masterstroke came in the form of Quillizabeth, a self-proclaimed psychic Whitney hired to perform an impromptu séance during her apartment viewing, making Amanda appear extraordinarily normal by comparison. Once Amanda was installed in their home, Whitney executed a carefully choreographed series of psychological warfare tactics. She laced Blake's favorite chocolate chip cookies with prescription sedatives, causing him to oversleep and miss important meetings. She systematically emptied his cereal boxes and replaced his toiletries with nearly empty containers. In a particularly devious move, she strategically placed apples behind furniture to rot, attracting swarms of fruit flies that drove Blake to distraction. Her most calculated act involved tampering with his laundry routine. Knowing his severe allergies, she added limonene-rich detergent to his hypoallergenic soap, triggering reactions he would inevitably blame on Amanda. Whitney watched with satisfaction as each small sabotage deepened the rift between Blake and Amanda, confident that their mutual antipathy would soon reach a breaking point. Whitney's elaborate revenge plan reaches its brutal climax through a series of calculated murders. She begins by killing Mr. Zimmerly, using an antique clock from Blake's collection as her weapon of choice, carefully ensuring his fingerprints are prominently placed on the murder weapon. Her violence escalates when she kidnaps Stacy, subjecting her to a horrific death before methodically removing her fingers as trophies, a signature that reveals the depth of her psychological disturbance. Whitney then turns on her accomplice, Elijah, slitting his throat after he serves his purpose in helping her secure both the tetrodotoxin poison and documentation for a new identity. Her ultimate goal comes into focus: to murder Amanda, frame Blake for the entire killing spree, and finally eliminate him with poisoned cookies laced with tetrodotoxin, a potent neurotoxin that leaves virtually no trace. The truth dawns on Blake during his visit to Telmont, where scattered pieces of evidence finally form a coherent picture of Whitney's machinations. Realizing he's already consumed the poisoned cookies, he desperately induces vomiting in an attempt to purge the toxin from his system. Despite the poison's debilitating effects, muscle weakness, dizziness, and increasing paralysis, he manages to drive back to New York, fighting the symptoms that threaten to overwhelm him. Every minute counts as he races to prevent Whitney from claiming her final victim. At the brownstone, Whitney has already put her endgame in motion. She attacks Amanda with surgical precision, plunging a knife into her target with what she believes is lethal accuracy. Blake arrives just as Whitney is savoring her apparent victory, but the poison has taken its toll. He collapses, his body finally surrendering to the tetrododotoxin. In a shocking turn, Amanda rises from her supposed death, blood seeping from her wound, and drives her own blade into Whitney with calculated force. The epilogue, set 4 months after the bloody confrontation, presents a seemingly peaceful resolution. Blake, having recovered from his near-fatal poisoning, has decided to embrace his roots by returning to Cleveland to manage his father's hardware business. Amanda has been instrumental in his recovery, helping him pack while agreeing to oversee the brownstone sale and living there in the interim. Their shared trauma has forged an unlikely bond, transforming their initial antagonism into something resembling trust. However, beneath this facade of closure lies a darker truth. Amanda harbors a secret that would shatter their newfound connection. She's been Frank Gallo's agent all along, hired to avenge his nephew Jordan's death by eliminating Whitney. The night of the final confrontation, Amanda had arrived with her own murderous agenda, planning to kill Whitney and pin the crime on Blake. Though events deviated from her original scheme, she still fulfilled her contract with Gallo. Her seemingly heroic intervention wasn't about saving Blake. It was pure self-preservation, ensuring her own survival while completing her mission. The Tenant masterfully explores the theme of false identities and the masks people wear to hide their true selves. Every character in the novel conceals significant secrets, creating layers of deception that peel away like psychological onion skins. Blake hides his serial infidelity and manipulative nature behind the facade of a successful businessman and devoted husband. Krista conceals her true identity as Whitney Cross and her murderous past beneath a veneer of sophisticated charm, while Amanda assumes Whitney's identity while concealing her own deadly mission of vengeance. These interwoven deceptions create a complex psychological thriller where every truth revealed only exposes deeper lies beneath. The brownstone itself becomes a powerful metaphor for these hidden identities, a beautiful Victorian facade concealing dark secrets within its walls. Each floor and room serves as a stage where different aspects of the characters' personalities emerge. The third floor bedroom, where Amanda slash Whitney stays, represents both physical and emotional distance, a fortress from which she can observe and manipulate. The kitchen becomes a space of forced intimacy and underlying tension, while the living room transforms into a battlefield for psychological warfare, where pleasantries mask murderous intent. Even the basement holds its own secrets, its darkness mirroring the hidden depths of its inhabitants. McFadden brilliantly manipulates perspective throughout the novel, allowing readers to experience events through different characters' distorted lenses. This technique highlights how perception shapes reality. What appears as persecution to Blake is righteous justice to Whitney, and what seems like salvation to Blake is calculated revenge to Amanda. The author masterfully shifts between time frames and viewpoints, forcing readers to question their own assumptions about truth and morality. Through careful revelation of backstory, McFadden shows how past trauma shapes present actions, making even the most villainous behaviors somewhat understandable, if not justifiable. The novel serves as a chilling reminder that we never truly know those closest to us, even those who share our homes and beds. Behind every familiar face might lurk a stranger with unknown motivations and a carefully concealed past. The character's facility with deception, from small daily lies to elaborate false identities, reflects our modern world's increasing comfort with multiple versions of self. In our digital age, where online personas can be crafted and manipulated at will, McFadden's thriller resonates as both entertaining fiction and disturbing commentary on contemporary society. The story explores how technology enables reinvention while making it harder to escape our past selves, creating a perfect storm of opportunity for both deception and discovery. Through masterful plotting and psychological insight, The Tenant demonstrates how easily trust can be manipulated and how devastating the consequences can be when the masks finally fall away. The novel suggests that perhaps the most dangerous deception is the one we practice on ourselves, believing we can truly know another person's heart and mind.